Experts on Call continuing on 580 CFRA with our guest this hour, Sean Rankin. He's the air quality guy from Indoor Air Quality Ottawa of Ottawa. And we're having a great conversation about some of the things to be on the lookout for with regard to air quality in your home and certainly your business. We're going to talk about commercial services in a sec, but Sean, let's carry on with our discussion on residential services. There are so many things to consider. One of the things that we were talking about during the break was if a homeowner wants to do renovation on an older home and perhaps discovers asbestos tiling on, say, a basement floor or something, what are the ramifications with that? And if you want to remove them?
Well, that's a good question, Dave, and we see this very often. Anybody who is planning a renovation for a home built before 1985 is obliged to perform a designated substance survey, or at the very least an asbestos survey. The minute that homeowner hires a plumber or an electrician or a carpenter to start opening wall assemblies that may or may not contain asbestos, the Ministry of Labor with Ontario Regulation 27805 is involved. You don't want to be the person to expose that plumber to this type of environmental concern. So typically you'll find asbestos-containing material in stipple popcorn ceilings, floor tiles, ceiling tiles, mud joint compound, horsehair plaster, which is our AltaVista and Glebe-type construction assemblies.
Really?
So if you're going to disturb and aerosolize any of these particulates, then you must be concerned about asbestos.
Now, this 1985 ruling, or at least the year, any houses built before 85 are subject to this?
Yes, because the government in 1985 started to restrict the amount of asbestos-containing material in construction assemblies. So manufacturers at that time, the mandate was to stop using asbestos. Asbestos is a wonderful product for keeping fire, proofing, cementitious materials bound together. But we realize now that it's a designated substance.
It's very toxic.
And it's only a problem, and this is very, very, very important, because we see a lot of media hype, internet hype that generates air quality anxiety is rampant. So somebody may consider an asbestos survey, then they go online and they read about asbestos or they read about mold, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. You hire an indoor air quality consultant. He's independent. That person will come to your home and tell you exactly what you need to do to comply with both the regulation and to maintain a healthy environment for your workers and your family.
Now, what about removing a tile floor? I mean, what happens? Say the homeowner wants to hire someone to come and remove these tiles off the floor. I'm using floor tiles as an example.
Well, if you have a tile, typically 8x8 or 7.5x7.5 asbestos-containing tiles, mottled gray or beige, these were very common. Now, these tiles must be analyzed using bulk analysis. So you have to take these tiles, have them analyzed, and determine if they are, in fact, asbestos-containing. The mastic, or the glue that was used to glue down these tiles, subsequently sometimes is also asbestos-containing. How that tile then is removed, either a type 2 or a type 3, is determined by how well that tile is sticking.
Okay.
Typically, in a basement floor that suffers a lot of vapor pressure. Now, vapor pressure is, once again, the moisture migrating from the underneath your floor slab, migrating up and through, or through your wall assemblies. Now, the analogy for vapor pressure is if you can imagine a canoe. With nobody in a canoe, it sits high and dry on the top of the water with no pressure on the keel or the gunwale. However, if you imagine four large men in this canoe and it pushes the canoe very deep, now you've exerted a tremendous vapor pressure on both the keel and the gunwales of that canoe. Well, that moisture migrating through that assembly, which is porous, concrete is porous, tends to lift those tiles.
Okay.
So sometimes those asbestos tiles lift off by hand. But sometimes you need an agitating device that scrapes or grinds them. And the minute you start scraping and grinding something that's asbestos-containing, you take a non-friable piece of material, that is to say I cannot break it up by my hand, and I've turned it into a friable material. That means I've aerosolized it or turned it into a powder form.
And it gets into the air.
And then it gets into the air. So the minute you start addressing any type of asbestos-containing material with a sander or a circular saw or a drill, now you're taking something that I could not previously crush with my hands and aerosolize, and I'm being able to aerosolize it now. There's the condition that you have to be aware of.
Now, if a homeowner wants to, you know, slide something underneath and try and pry these tiles off himself or herself, and they start breaking in half or they break in pieces, how dangerous is that?
Well, if they're not creating a dust, it's not as dangerous. The government is concerned about the Ministry of Labor Occupational Health and Safety. That's your Ontario 27805.
Okay.
The homeowner, however, is the homeowner. What he chooses or she chooses to do in their own home is up to them. But once again, pay attention to what you're exposing yourself to. Wear your personal protective equipment. Mm-hmm. At the very least, you want a NIOSH P100 mask. That's the purple or magenta mask that covers your face, eyes, and it straps behind your head. But do your research. Call your consultant if you're concerned. Baby steps win the day. Okay. It's much easier to know what you're doing and create a good soup with good recipe than retroactively go back to have a big cleanup on your hands.
What about after the fact? In other words, say you've put on the gear, you've talked about the mask, you've got the special clothes and whatnot, and you've removed what you need to remove. Can you then access that area or that room without problem, or do you have to wait a certain number of days for the air to settle? Or
every condition and every environmental remediation or abatement cleanup is different.
Okay.
If you're doing a mold cleanup, you put up what's called a critical barrier. A critical barrier is some way to keep the air on that side different from the air on this side.
Okay.
So the work area is then depressurized to a certain amount of depressurization, not too much to pull combustion spillage back down your hot water tank or fireplace, and that's where the experts come in mind.
Okay.
Then you depressurize the workplace from the environment. Work ensues in that. You aerosolize a tremendous amount of particulate, but it's being HEPA filtered and dealt with engineered controls professionally.
Okay.
Meanwhile, the occupant is living a healthy environment upstairs or in the adjacent location without any ill effects whatsoever, provided you have good engineering controls, good consulting beforehand, and a reputable, trained, certified company doing the work.
Now, what about mold determination and mold removal? I'm thinking, I'm going to go back to a basement scenario once again where perhaps an older house did have an asbestos floor and has a mold problem. That's quite a combination.
It is. And mold is ubiquitous. That's a consulting term we use that means it's absolutely everywhere. So once again, beware the internet hype that generates air quality anxiety. Do your homework. Quantifying the amount of mold that is in fact aerosolized in your home is very, very important. And you cannot do that by a company that's coming in who offers mold remediation services.
Right.
Because mold is something you're typically not going to see. It's an aerosolized particulate. And at the very least, any mold or asbestos remediation job should be tested by a third-party consultant before you pay the contractor.
Okay.
So that contractor is only going to do what has to be done to comply with the Act and industry standards. The building gets clearance tested. Once that clearance testing criteria has been met, now you can pay your contractor.
Okay.
So independent consulting is the way to go.
Absolutely. And certainly for questions on that, they can call the listener can call your office. What is the telephone number, by the way, of your office?
613-821-0035.
Perfect. Again, that's 821-0035, Indoor Air Quality Ottawa. Now, we've talked a lot about residential services. Maybe we should touch on some of the services you folks provide for commercial buildings and entities.
Well, commercial calls keep us very, very busy. And commercial calls are somewhat different in their approach because it's assembly occupancy. You have a lot of people sharing a small space.
Mm-hmm.
And you have an air handling unit typically that's on the roof. And these air handling units exchange air. A residential furnace is an interior loop that returns and supplies internal air only.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ASHRAE standard, the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, Air Conditioning Engineers of America, is the governing body for commercial buildings in Canada. So you have to adhere to the ASHRAE standard to make sure that the building is getting adequate make-up air. And this is what most commercial air quality inspections are concerned with. The mechanical system, how much air are we diluting from this office space, and is the amount of air being delivered to that office space adequate for, say, the accounting department, which is 25 people strong?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, what about, you mentioned the ASHRAE standard, or ASHRAE standard, rather. What about LEED construction? Is that when a building is built using the LEED I guess it's parameter or method. It's usually environmentally preferable. Does that air standard become
20% of your LEED certification comes from air quality.
Okay.
The rest of it is construction techniques, how airtight the building is, how energy efficiency and design your building is.
Okay.
Are we using renewable products in that building? However, 20% of the points to achieve your LEED certification come from the mechanical system itself and air quality. So air quality does pose off-gassing of the VOCs we talked about previously. In some certifications, you have a certain amount of time that that brand new building remains empty just so we can off-gas and accelerate heat through evaporative pressure, all those chemicals through dilution.
Now, what about the size of a building? You know, say a business or a building owner calls you. Are there different tests involved for different size buildings? I mean, obviously a skyscraper of 12 or 14 stories will be different than a two or three story office structure.
Subject to the designated substance or the environmental concern you're testing, you're exactly right, Dave. So there are a certain amount of samples taken per square foot if it's asbestos or mold. There's a certain amount of chemicals sensing units that you put in place for temperature and relative humidity. The interesting thing is we use carbon dioxide, which is what we exhale when we're breathing, as a tracer gas. So a commercial investigation is testing how much carbon dioxide is expelled and how much that is versus the exterior environment.
Oh, okay. So basically, the best thing to do, I guess, if a business wants to get more information to do some kind of a study from its commercial building standpoint, obviously, best thing to do is just to give your office a call and will a consultant come out and talk to them to determine what their specific needs might be?
Well, the typical protocol is I get on the phone, I speak to the building operator or manager, and we determine, is there a problem? Are you doing an environmental audit? If so, what are your specific conditions? And then we design the investigation based on your specific needs and wants.
All right. Experts on Call on 580 CFRA. Very interesting. Indoor Air Quality Ottawa is the company in discussion this afternoon. And we're chatting with Sean Rankin. He's the air quality guy. We'll be right back with more.